Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. And if you'd like to skip the intro or move to any specific part of the podcast, please refer to the timestamps listed in the episode description. Thank you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of True Crime Society podcast, the first episode of the year 2025. We're happy to be back, hoping for a wonderful year. It started off with a bang with all these cyber truck explosions and chaos as usual. Not to start off on a downer note, I didn't mean to do that. It's going to be a good year.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully for everyone who listens and us, it's going to be a good year. Things are onwards and upwards from here.
Yeah, we had our break. We're happy to be back, feeling well-rested.
Yeah.
And like you were saying on Patreon, when you go back to your job after a break, usually you're like, ugh, I feel horrible. I don't want to go back to my job. But podcasting, it's actually exciting to come back because I'm like, wow, I haven't done this for a while.
Yeah, and I feel like, I don't know if you feel the same, but over the holiday break prior to New Year, it feels like things were quieter in the crime space. There wasn't a whole lot going on.
Everyone was busy, the criminals. But,
yeah, so we are starting to look at our calendar of episode ideas for the year. If you have any episode suggestions for ones that we haven't covered, definitely send them through to us. Probably Instagram message is the easiest way, or you can email truecrimesociety@gmail.com. We always really, really appreciate any episode suggestions of ones that you guys find interesting or you think that we should cover, or even ones like trials that are coming up. We'd love to know. Obviously, we know of some of the main ones like Brian Koberger. There's a few other big ones maybe happening this year, but anything that you think we and our listeners might be interested in, definitely send them through. We really, really, really appreciate when you do that.
Even if you sent it to us before and we still haven't done it, send it again, because sometimes we're like, oh, I'm going to save it. And then I'm at work and something happens and I forget to actually write it down. So don't think we're ignoring your request or something, or we don't want to do it. Just sometimes we get busy and it gets lost. So just send them again.
Today's episode that we got, when we get into it, is actually, I'm pretty sure, a listener suggestion. I didn't write down the name. So if it was you, let me know and we'll give you a shout out next time. But absolutely send us through. We'll try and always credit you if you give us the idea. We really, really, really like your feedback and appreciate it.
Yeah. Also, just another episode note, we're not going to have much chat, but I do want to say I have a space heater on right now. So if you hear that, I'm sorry. I have no choice because I'm an idiot and I ran out of oil for my furnace. And of course, it's winter here. It's cold. So the heat doesn't work. It was 50 degrees in the house when I got home. The low tonight is 26 degrees. So I had to scramble, try to find someone who would deliver oil. Well, really, Mike had to do the scrambling because I was like, I have to record in 15 minutes. You have to figure this out. So he called around. Luckily, we found someone who is willing to come tomorrow. Thank God. So I just have to make it through the night. But if you can hear a little bit of a heater in the background, I'm sorry. You don't want me to freeze. So we're just going to get into these updates because we feel like this could be a bit of a longer episode. The case we're going to talk about today is pretty crazy. It's got a little bit of everything. But we're going to start off with the update about Liam Payne. 5 people have been charged in relation to the death of Liam Payne. I'm assuming we all know who, One Direction singer, fell from a balcony, all that. We know the story. 5 people were charged. One being Liam's friend, Rogelio, aka Roger Norris, has been charged with manslaughter, specifically the charge of negligent homicide, and he's been banned from leaving the country. So we talked about him a little bit in the episode. We suspected he was the friend that they were looking to charge that was talked about at the time.
Even though he denied it, he denied it publicly a lot. He was the one, I think, who sent one of the last text messages to Liam, if not the last one, basically saying something like, are you along the lines of, you okay, or after.
And he like paid the sex workers and kind of seemed like he was doing almost like assistant work in a way.
Yeah. Some people said that it was his manager. He denied it and basically said they were just friends. But it does seem like he was assisting Liam in the things that he wanted to do.
Yeah. So other people charged, there's two employees from Casa Sur Hotel that have been charged, the manager, who's Gilda Martin, and the head of reception, who's Esteban Grassi. Another person charged is a waiter at a restaurant in Puerto Madero, which is an affluent area of Buenos Aires. And then there is another hotel employee of Casa Sur named Ezequiel. They were both charged with supplying narcotics. And they were detained. So it seems like this is where the drugs came from, these two men. This is from an article, a little bit about it. It says Roger Norris was accused of abandoning Payne to his fate, knowing that he was incapable of caring for himself and having full knowledge of the state of intoxication, vulnerability, and helplessness in which he found himself. The charges state that Gilda Martin, who is the hotel manager, was present in the hotel lobby where Payne was prior to his death, and that she noticed the singer was unable to stand due to consumption of various substances. They also state that she allowed for Payne to be taken to his room moments before his death and that the balcony there was a source of risk. The charges allege she should have kept him safe in an area without sources of danger in company until medical care was provided to him. Grassi is another person who was arrested, is alleged to have led a group of three people who dragged Payne to his room moments before his death.
I'm assuming he was one of the men who, when each of them carried his arms and his legs. Yeah. Well, he was one of those men. We've had a lot of messages about this, and people are like, where's basically Liam's responsibility in this?
Yeah.
I do agree. He chose to do the drugs. He chose to become, you know, he did all those things. The charges I do agree with is that
the
hotel. Well, I also think that the hotel staff were negligent in putting him in that room and locking the door. But then
I feel like I have generally like a lot of empathy towards people who struggle with addiction because of friends and people I've known growing up and just being around it. But I think it's ridiculous to criminally charge the hotel staff. I could see them maybe being sued.
Yeah.
Suing the hotel. But what is she supposed to do? Like, this isn't her job to deal with some out of control. I don't know what training like hotel staff goes through, but to deal with someone who is being out of control on drugs in the lobby where there's other guests, other staff that could be putting them at risk.
And they've said that basically.
Do they want to lock him in a closet?
That he smashed his laptop or apparently smashed his laptop. Like, it seems like he was being quite aggressive and violent before, and that's why and then he maybe passed out and they carried him to the room. Well, you said in the episode too, they did remove the mirror from the room because they thought that he might hurt himself with the mirror. I don't know.
They can't be held totally responsible for him.
It starts a discussion basically about where does personal responsibility come in. You know, it's not like, for example, his drink was drugged and he had no idea. He absolutely knew what he was doing up to a point and then he got out of control. So then, I don't know. It's an interesting discussion. I feel like some of those charges may not stick. Like Roger's charges maybe would, because there's the text messages and the drug charges will probably stick. But the ones about the hotel employees, I could go either way, I think.
It's just like, who's to say what could have happened? Like, if they didn't put him back in his room, what would have happened in the lobby? Could he have not hurt himself another way in the lobby? And would that still have been their fault?
And maybe he was threatening people. Like, we don't actually know the conversation that happened and the words that were used. Like, there could have been a bunch of stuff going on and that they felt they were in danger. And, like, if a man's passed out in the hotel, I guess could have called an ambulance. But, it doesn't sound like he was unconscious because they said he held his head up. Yeah, they did. And by the time the police got there, he had already gone out the balcony. So it all happened very quickly. The thing is too, this is, and I'm not making excuses for them, obviously things should have been done differently, but this is a small-ish boutique hotel. You know, I have no doubt that this is probably one of the first times they've dealt with a celebrity who has acted like this.
Yeah, like they probably don't get training in what to do in a situation like this.
I'm sure they will now. Average people. But yeah. I feel like it was just one of those things where they had to make split-second decisions based on how he was acting and what he was doing at the time. And obviously now it's kind of backfired a little bit. But
and they're probably afraid too because, like you said, he is a pretty big deal of a celebrity where, like, they don't want him to then, like, go and bash them and turn One Direction fans against him or something, yeah. You know?
I do find it interesting because usually in cases we get messages from people who have opinions on both sides of the story. I haven't seen one single message from anyone saying, good, they deserve to be charged. Like about the hotel stuff. I mean, the drugs, people, no one's arguing that. But people, most of the messages are like, well, where's his culpability and responsibility in this? Obviously, he's dead, so he can't do anything now. But it just seems like it's placing the blame for someone's decisions when – do you know what I mean?
I think more normal would be that they just got, like, sued for wrongful death or something.
Yeah, like a civil lawsuit or something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, an interesting update. It feels like the authorities are taking it very seriously. Like, they've found a waiter who obviously maybe he met Liam at a restaurant and offered to get Liam some drugs. I don't know. But they seem to be tracking down everyone.
Yeah.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
One other just quick update, in case you missed it in breaking news, is that Gypsy Rose Blanchard has given birth. Her and her boyfriend Ken Urquhart welcomed a baby girl on the same day that she was released from prison 1 year ago. So an interesting anniversary. Their daughter is named Aurora Raina Urquhart. She was born at 9:48 a.m. on December 28th, weighing 6 pounds 5. So a very big turnaround for Gypsy in 1 year. She was with the other guy. She's now with Ken. She was married, divorced. Had a baby with someone else. Big year for out of jail. A big year for Gypsy. Yeah. I actually thought
so much going on.
She may have picked the name because you remember when she was growing up, her and her mother always seemed obsessed with Disneyland. Like there was photos of them with like all. Thought maybe Aurora
Disney princess.
Came from the Disney princess. But she has said they called the baby Aurora because both of us have a fascination with the Northern Lights, and the proper term is the Aurora Borealis. I think it was maybe in 2018 we wrote each other's future kids' names on pieces of paper, and Aurora is what we both picked without even knowing each other was picking it.
Wow, groundbreaking.
Yeah. So anyway, the other news in Gypsy, I don't know if you've seen, is that her TikTok got hacked. Did you see that?
Yeah.
And the hacker was wanting money out of her. And she's like, take it. I was going to get rid of it anyway. I don't have any money. I'm paraphrasing. Yeah. But she said basically, I'm not a millionaire like you think I am. And anyway, so she's had a lot of
She's like, I'm not paying you.
Yeah. No doubt there'll be some photo shoot with people with the baby in a few weeks and she'll get a hefty payday for that.
Yeah. Side note, Aurora, was it Urquhart? That's such a hard.
Aurora Urquhart.
Yeah. I hate saying Aurora. Like, it's not easy to say.
I know. It's so many R's. Aurora.
And it's hard to just, like, type because it's just too many. It's annoying. It sounds like it should be a pretty word, but then the more you say it, I'm just like, Aurora.
And needs it just a, like a basic last name with no R's in it.
And what's the nickname?
Rory. Rory's cute.
Yeah, that's cute.
I don't, yeah, I wouldn't even know what other names you'd have for Aurora.
You Rory. Can't.
Yeah.
Aurora. It. Okay. So congrats, Gypsy Rose. All right, so today we're going to be talking about the case of Mike Williams, who was a missing man, who was missing in Florida in the year 2000. He was missing for a long time, 17 years he was missing, but his remains were eventually discovered in 2017. It was assumed at the time that he had drowned while duck hunting because of how... That's what he was doing. He was duck hunting. They found his abandoned boat, abandoned car at the lake. Never found his body. Thought maybe alligators ate him. And time went on and on and on. But eventually, after some scandal involving his wife, more of the story was revealed. And it really is an insane story, but eventually his wife was charged with murder and he didn't accidentally drown after all.
Yeah. I feel like, because even I followed his case, like this, I feel like he went missing right around the time I started to get into true crime and I followed his case. And it was like, honestly, everyone thought it was a missing persons case for quite a long time. And then as more and more things started coming out, you know, it was obvious where it was going to head.
Yeah, it really is like a lifetime movie. I know we say that about cases, but this one got it all.
This story has always been one that has fascinated people because it's so bizarre that this could even happen.
17 and a half years, we have always talked about Mike Williams being missing. Not ever finding his body, not ever having resolution, was very difficult.
He was going to wake up early and go duck hunting. He was a big duck hunter. And so he went off to the lake and then he never came back.
Mike Williams was a straight shooter. He loved his family. He loved his wife. He put her on a pedestal.
Mike did everything that she wanted done. Denise said, jump. Mike wanted to know how high.
They were going to be celebrating their wedding anniversary. And so when he did not come home about noon, when he was supposed to, Denise started getting worried and started calling around.
This search was the most intensive I've ever seen.
Law enforcement and friends and family combing the lake, looking for him. They found the boat, his truck, the trailer, that was all there.
I got up in the helicopter, flew around and looked for his body. And one of the things that I noticed, there were no less than 15 to 20 very large alligators swimming all around this area.
Jerry Michael Williams, he went by Mike. He was born on October 16th, 1969. He grew up in Bradfordville, Florida, where his father, Jerry, worked as a Greyhound bus driver. And his mother, Cheryl, was a daycare provider. Their parents chose to raise them in a double-wide trailer instead of buying a traditional home so they could afford to send their sons to North Florida Christian High School. Mike excelled in school. He was voted best personality by his peers, and he was the student council president. He loved playing football, and he also took up duck hunting when he was 15 years old. So while at school, he became involved with another student named Denise Merrill. Denise loved cheerleading, and she had been voted best dressed. Very nice. After graduating from high school, Mike went on to Florida State University, where he majored in political science and urban planning. Before he graduated from university, he got a job with Ketchum Appraisal Group as a property appraiser. According to Findagrave, Mike's father, Jerry, passed away in September 1989 at the age of 51. Mike and Denise got married in 1994 when he was around 25, and they had a daughter together in 1999 named Ansley. Mike's boss, Clay Ketchum, said that he was the hardest working man he ever saw. apparently Mike would go home to have dinner with his family before going back to work after they went to bed. His boss also said he was an unbelievable worker. It's not uncommon for him to do 15-hour days. I mean, he'd be in there early, work until 1 or 2 in the morning, then be right back. He had incredible energy. By 2000, Mike was making a salary of $200,000, which today is equivalent to $366,000 after inflation, if your job felt like keeping up with inflation, which most don't. But that's a side note. From there, Mike and Denise purchased a home on Centennial Oak Circle, which was in a small upscale subdivision on the east side of Tallahassee. Before he disappeared, Mike and Denise took out a $1 million life insurance policy for him. They purchased the policy from Mike's good friend, Brian Winchester, who had also known Denise since they were children. I think it seems like he was maybe knew Denise forever and then became good friends with Mike.
Yeah.
It's hard to say.
No, that's I think he started out with Denise. Denise introduced him, and then Brian also was married to another woman, but they like it seems like that the couples like were really close out. Friends. Yeah.
Yeah. In December 2000, Mike and Denise told Mike's family that they were planning to have another baby, and Denise would later say that they'd been planning to go on vacation to Hawaii and that Mike had plans to travel to Jamaica for work. So it seemed like all was going great at this time.
Yep.
A friend of Mike's named Scott Dungy said they were a great couple. He said, if you knew Mike, he's the kind of person that is going to do anything and everything for you. So Denise found a gem.
Just before Mother's Day in 1999, Denise gave birth to the couple's daughter. And by chance, a local Tallahassee TV station was at the hospital.
We're just totally overwhelmed. She was due Tuesday, and she would have made me wait a whole nother year for Mother's Day.
She tipped the scales.
It was unbelievable. I have a whole new respect for my wife and women in general and what they go through to bring a new child, new life into the world.
The day Mike vanished was Saturday, December 16th, 2000, and Denise said that Mike got up before dawn and took his boat to go duck hunting at Lake Seminole. The lake was about 50 miles or 80 kilometers from their home. And a little bit of info about the lake. Lake Seminole is a reservoir located in the southwest corner of Georgia along its border with Florida. It contains 37,500 acres and has a shoreline of 376 miles or 605 kilometers. The fish in Lake Seminole include largemouth bass, crappies, chain pickerel, catfish, striped bass, and other species. There's also American alligators, snakes, and various waterfowl present in the lake, which is known for its goose hunting and also duck hunting, I guess.
Yeah.
At noon on December 16th, Denise called her father to tell him that Mike had not returned home from his hunting trip, even though they had plans to celebrate their wedding anniversary that night. Brian, Mike and Denise's friend that we'd mentioned before, went with his father, his own father, to the area of the lake where they knew that Mike usually hunted. And Mike's 1994 Ford Bronco was found parked by a remote boat launch at the lake. Brian and his father contacted the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission to report Mike as a missing hunter. The FFWCC, so that's the Florida Fish and Wildlife. We're just going to say FFWCC.
Even the abbreviation so
even the abbreviation, yeah, yeah, is a lot. They began searching for him that day, but due to an incoming storm, their efforts were cut short. So Mike's boat was found abandoned on the lake about 225 feet or 69 meters away from the boat ramp. And a helicopter pilot spotted the boat, but initially assumed it was one being used in the search.
I have heard some other kind of conflicting things that Brian was the one who found the boat or that the helicopter pilot was the one who saw it. I guess it's now 25 years ago. So there's kind of been stories that have changed over time, but yeah. I have read both things, both scenarios.
Yeah. So an officer who worked on the search said, "We didn't have a whole lot to go on, except there was an empty boat and the guy didn't show up. There was nothing there that we had from the scene that suggested foul play at all." So Mike's shotgun was still on the boat in its case, but there was no sign of Mike.
Can you show me the area that you guys searched in?
Basically this area from here to there, about 5 acres.
Alton Reynu and David Arnett were among the first law enforcement officers to get a call about a missing duck hunter.
What we thought had happened is that he possibly fell out of the boat or capsized.
Is it unusual for people to fall out of boats while they're hunting for ducks?
It's not unusual. It happens quite often out here as far as they might hit a stump and throw them out. We've done a grid search, very slow, meticulous grid search, back and forth over the search area.
We stayed with that grid until we covered this whole area.
This is the tool of your trade, right?
That was actually one of the poles.
And all you do is put it in the water and see if you feel anything.
If it's a log, it's kind of a thump, kind of a hard thump. If it would have been a body, you hit it, it's kind of like a pillow.
Did you feel something ever on the bottom that felt like a body?
Never.
Deputies with the Jackson County Sheriff's Department were present during the search, but worked in a support capacity because the FFWCC were the ones leading the search.
And it was only a missing hunter. They didn't think
missing
at that
hunter.
Stage there was any foul play that needed police investigation.
Yeah.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
So the search focused on a 10-acre or 4-hectare area near Mike's abandoned truck. And his boat was found in an area of the lake known as Stump Field, which got its name due to the many stumps protruding above and below the water level, like tree stumps from, there must have been old trees there. So could be dangerous to boats if you don't see them.
It was to do, I actually learned a lot about this lake while I was doing this episode, but basically they dammed the lake, or, you know, it came from a dam, so there was a whole bunch of trees, and that's why, like, even in the photos, and there's a ton of videos online where you can just see these stumps sticking out. Like, some people make it a sport to kind of get around the stumps.
Dodge them.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff online about this stump field and similar areas in the lake.
So searchers assume that it was likely that Mike must have hit a stump while driving the boat, which caused him to be ejected. Because the boat, it was like a motorboat.
Yeah.
So the water in the area was 8 to 12 feet deep, or 2.5 to 3.7 meters deep. And the theory was that Mike fell overboard while wearing his waders, which filled with water, causing him to drown. So, you know, like the boot pants.
The enclosed
if you don't
boots,
know what waders
yeah.
are, yeah. So if they fill
you
with
basically
water,
put it over your
down.
Shoes or your pants to keep them dry while you're kind of in shallower water.
Yeah, so yeah. You'd get weighed down by them.
It's not very deep, just as an observation. Like 12 feet isn't super deep, especially as a search area. Like I know when we talked about Ryan Borgwart, I feel like his was like hundreds and hundreds of feet deep or whatever when they did the search. It doesn't seem like a super deep area.
No, but I guess since you were saying like it was dammed and there's always stumps, maybe it just a lot of shit in there. Mike's friend Scott took part in the search and went up in a helicopter to survey the area. And he said, you know, one of the things that I noticed, there were no less than 15 to 20 very large alligators swimming all around this area. So they assumed that Mike's body would float to the surface within 3 to 7 days, but investigators thought it could actually take a little longer due to a cold front in the area. Florida Fish and Wildlife Officer Alton Reynu said, we've done a grid search, very slow, meticulous grid search, back and forth over the search area. One search method that was used involved a PVC pipe pole, and the pole was put into the water and used like a prong. Alton said, if it's a log, it's kind of a thump, kind of a hard thump. If it would have been a body, you hit it, it's kind of like a pillow.
Seems, given all the details.
Very archaic.
Yeah.
Just going to stab around in the lake, I guess, with the pipe. But hey, whatever works. Cadaver dogs were also brought in to no avail. And 10 days after Mike vanished, a camouflage patterned hunting hat was found, but it was determined that it was unrelated. So a search for him continued until February 2001. The final report issued in late February said, nothing in investigative or search and rescue efforts has produced any definitive evidence of a boating accident or fatality as of this date. Since no remains were found, it was suggested that Mike's body may have been taken by alligators. A private search firm offered to help, and the head of the firm said, with the wildlife around, I would guess that the alligators have dismembered and have stored the remains in a location that we would not be able to find. Wouldn't they just eat them?
I feel like
alligators
just
store stuff for later.
Yeah, like crocodiles do the same type of thing, is that like they'll often kill the prey and then keep it somewhere for when they will need it, because they only need to eat a certain amount. So
they'll have a little snack here and there.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Soon there was another explanation offered for why Mike's body could not be found. That he had been snatched by an alligator.
Alligators, they don't eat you right then. This is morbid to talk about, but they go stuff you somewhere for 6 months and then come back later.
One of the rescue teams agreed, writing, "The alligators have dismembered and have stored the remains in a location that we would not be able to find."
Early searchers reported seeing a lot of alligators, and some officials were willing to accept that as a possible resolution to the case. The FCC, I can never read this acronym right. The
FCC. I could just say the commission, but anyway.
The Wildlife Commissions.
Yeah.
The Wildlife Commission's David Arnett said, everybody knows the lake is full of alligators. You look for other answers. Why hasn't the body appeared? Another suggestion was that Mike's body became entangled in beds of weeds and plants that were in the lake. And along with the alligators, turtles and catfish could have easily destroyed the remains. On February 11, 2001, Denise held a memorial service for Mike at the Thomasville Road Baptist Church. The service was held the day after the search concluded. Some people question if Mike had possibly run off of his own accord. And Patty Ketchum, who is his boss's wife, said, we knew Mike had not run off. I mean, he loved his family. He adored his daughter, adored her. So Mike did not run off. This was not some elaborate ruse.
So in June 2001, so around 6 or 7 months after he went missing, a fisherman discovered a pair of waders floating in the lake near Stumpfield. Searchers returned to the area, and they also found a hunting jacket and a flashlight at the bottom of the lake. In the jacket pocket was a hunting license that belonged to Mike. They said there were no animal teeth marks on any of the items, and investigators also said that none of the items appeared to have been in the water for the length of time that Mike had been missing. So obviously, especially with the jacket and things like that, if you'd been in the water for 7 months, you would assume there would be some deterioration.
Deteriorated, yeah.
Yeah, and they said basically it didn't appear that the items had been in the water for as long as Mike had apparently been. There was also no DNA evidence on the clothing that could link it to Mike. So even though his license was in the pocket, in the other things, there was no DNA evidence found. After the items were found, though, interestingly, Denise petitioned to have Mike legally declared dead. A Leon County judge granted her request based on the items being found and basically agreed that there was probability that Mike had been eaten by animals in the lake. In Florida, there is usually a 5-year wait to declare someone dead. The judge said that Mike's cause of death was accidental drowning while duck hunting on Lake Seminole / body has not yet been recovered. So after Mike was declared dead, Denise immediately claimed on the life insurance policies that Mike had. We mentioned that he'd taken out the $1 million one with Brian Winchester. He also had two others to a value of $1.75 million. Scott, who's his friend that we mentioned, spoke about Denise's financial situation after Mike disappeared. She apparently had to sell some things while she was waiting for the life insurance to come out. He said, I was helping her with some of the items that needed to be sold and to generate some cash until the insurance money came. So again, because of inflation, $1.75 million is equivalent to around $3.2 million today. Seems like quite a lot of money for a guy in his 30s to have his life insurance.
How much he was paying monthly for this.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, he obviously was earning a decent wage as well, but it seems like a lot of life insurance. Patty, the boss's wife, spoke about the amounts, and she said Mike wanted to make sure his family was taken care of because he hunted and fished and did some pretty high-risk activity, and Clay, who's his boss, really encouraged him to load up. So that could be an explanation as to why he had such a high amount. Despite all these theories that Mike drowned in the lake and was involved in with the animals, Cheryl, who's his mother, has said that she never ever believed he drowned in the lake. A reporter, Jennifer Portman, said about Cheryl, she didn't know what happened. All she knew was that her son was not in the lake. She just knew it like a mum knows something just deep inside of her, and she was absolutely committed to finding out what happened.
It's never out of my head. Where is this child? He may be dead, but he's not in that lake. And if somebody did hurt my child, I want them found and I want them punished.
So over the years, Cheryl started keeping detailed notes about the cage. Over the years, Cheryl started keeping detailed notes about the case. Eventually, she had 27 single-space pages of information that she collated. Denise, the wife, did not help Cheryl at all with the notes or with the investigation. According to CBS, Denise completely cut her off. Clay, Mike's boss, said that Denise was adamant that there'd be no further investigation into the disappearance and that she threatened to cut off her granddaughter from Cheryl. Denise said to her, if you continue to press for this investigation, you will never see your granddaughter again. So in 2004, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement agreed to reopen Mike's case at Cheryl's request. It doesn't usually have jurisdiction in missing persons cases and cannot get involved based on a citizen's request, although it can offer assistance to local agencies, which is what it did. Many law enforcement officers apparently agreed with Cheryl that the circumstances surrounding Mike's disappearance were unusual. These are some main points from their investigation. It says the boat launch where his Bronco was found which he would have presumably used to put his boat in the lake was an undeveloped patch of mud. Yet nearby there were finished concrete launches that he was known to have used in the past. So that seems like kind of unusual behavior for him. Wouldn't you just make it easy for yourself and use the concrete launch? Kind of question that was raised. The storm the night after he was reported missing had westerly winds that should have blown the abandoned unmoored boat across the lake to the Georgia side, which it didn't. When the boat was recovered, its engine was off and yet the gas tank was full. According to a representative of the boat manufacturer, if the engine had been running when Mike allegedly fell out of the boat, it should have stayed on, with the boat running in circles until its fuel was exhausted. Something sounds fishy on the deal, the representative said when he was asked about the situation. Investigators also learned that Mike usually didn't hunt alone. An officer from the Wildlife Commission, I'll just say that instead of going with the abbreviation, said some things looked unusual right off the bat. Then after a couple or 3 days and after the weeks went on, those things looked even more out of place. It's kind of interesting to me that this has now been said 4 years after he disappeared. Why was this not raised at the start if you're thinking this is weird and fishy? And anyway. So despite everyone carrying on about the alligators and about how the alligators likely took Mike, which, again, why did they not pick this up at the time? Alligators apparently do not generally feed during the winter months, which was December, due to the colder temperatures. The water, already at 58 degrees Fahrenheit or 14 degrees Celsius on the day that Mike disappeared, dropped to 46 degrees Fahrenheit or 8 degrees Celsius, and the lake iced out to as much as 20 feet from the shore. So very, very cold temperatures. Likely the alligators wouldn't have been feeding. A local alligator expert named Matt Oresco said it is highly unlikely an alligator would have been active. All they are doing is maintaining their body temperature. 58 degrees is too cold for an alligator to be interested in food at all, which is so wild to me. Why did it take years? Surely this should be basic knowledge about alligator feeding practices.
I swear there was another case where alligator feeding practices were brought up, unless it was this one.
Maybe.
I just remember reading about from this one because I was just like, oh, wow, that's actually good to know. And it was so random that I took note of it being like, oh, the alligators actually aren't doing much during this time and these temperatures.
It's crazy that it took 4 years for them to actually think about this as maybe a hole in their theory.
Well, it just shows, like, honestly, sometimes it really is just laziness. Everyone was just willing to be like, yeah, I mean, it seems like he drowned in this lake that's full of alligators. So case closed.
Yeah. So a friend who used to hunt with Mike also spoke about his usual hunting practices. He said that Mike never put his waders on until he reached an area that he wanted to hunt in. So the theory, as we mentioned, was that he was in the boat, went overboard after it crashed, and he drowned because his waders filled up. But according to the friend, he wouldn't have had the waders on until he'd stopped the boat and he was getting ready to hunt. Mm-hmm. The friend said, as much as he preached that to me, why would he be wearing his waders while driving the boat?
Mm-hmm.
So this is where the twists start. In 2005, Denise married Brian Winchester. You'll remember that this is the man who sold them the life insurance, who was also Mike's best friend. It would later emerge that Denise and Brian had begun having an affair in 1997. So this is 3 years before Mike disappeared. So you can kind of see where this is heading now. Brian would later say, I had a good wife, I had a kid, and I had Denise on the side. This is messed up thinking, but in my mind, I had it pretty good. As you mentioned earlier, Denise and Mike apparently seemed happy on the surface of their marriage at the time he disappeared, but the reality was very different. It's been now said that Denise was unhappy with Mike but didn't want to divorce him in case she lost custody of their daughter, and Mike wanted to have another child and Denise did not agree.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
In 2006, Ronnie Austin, who was an investigator for the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, said, my gut feeling is Mike did not die in the lake. I would say this is a suspicious missing person. It also was determined that the scene where Mike had apparently disappeared from had not been preserved or investigated properly. His Bronco and his boat were both given back to the family with basically minimal investigation. In 2007, Cheryl spoke to the media and said that she hoped Mike was alive. She said, I get criticized a lot for not admitting that Mike's dead. All I know is that I can't stop looking for him until I find him. So that same year, the FDLE closed the case again. They said they were convinced now that the alligator theory was wrong, but they had nothing further to investigate and no leads to follow. In 2007, Denise and Brian made a statement. They said, for 7 years, we have prayed and hoped to find out with certainty what happened to Mike. Nobody wants Mike found more than we do. Which is highly doubtful. So the Florida Department of Financial Services Division of Insurance Fraud, very long, but basically an insurance fraud investigator, began looking into the case from that angle in 2008. Their lead attorney said, the circumstances surrounding this case raise many serious and troubling questions. The same attorney said that if he had known that any if he or any other person investigating had known that there was a large life insurance policy out on Mike and who the beneficiary was, aka Denise, the search may have been handled differently.
Should they have looked into that?
Yeah,
is that the whole point?
So. It was also noted that Denise's court petition to have Mike declared dead only mentioned one of the life insurance policies, not the other two, which brought it to the $1.75 million total. Only the $1 million policy was mentioned in the petition. Despite all of this, and I feel like there just seems like there's so many red flags here, the fraud case ended up being closed in 2008 without anything further happening. The attorney said our job was extremely difficult and we were simply unable to develop enough evidence to proceed with the investigation. He did say that if they got new information, they could reopen it. He said, we have suspicions, but what we need is evidence. I feel like Denise and Brian got so lucky for so, so many years to get away with this.
Yeah, totally.
Just so lucky. So as we mentioned, they got married, but their marriage was tumultuous. They separated in 2012. The reason for the separation was reported to be Brian's sex addiction. Denise filed for divorce in 2015. Brian opposed the divorce and had to be ordered to comply. So this has been like going on for years that they were separated, divorced. She filed for divorce in 2015. On August 5th, 2016, Denise left her home to drive to her job at the Florida State University. She was sitting in the car and was on the phone to her sister when someone climbed over the back seat. So it seems like someone had been waiting in the car for her. Nightmare. Anyway, it was Brian, the now estranged husband.
Yeah. Oh my God, another Brian.
Oh yeah, God, I didn't even think about that.
To the list, we need it until now.
Starting off the year with a Brian. Brian took her phone away and began yelling directions at her. She refused to comply with what he was asking until he pulled out a gun. Brian apparently went to this extreme of trying to kidnap Denise as she had blocked his calls and wasn't responding to texts or anything, Jesus. Any communication from him. Despite Brian ordering her to drive, Denise drove to a CVS parking lot and pulled up by the door. Brian told her that he was going to kill himself with the gun because he had nothing to live for if they divorced. Denise managed to calm him down and took him back to where his own vehicle was parked. He got out and went to his truck. He then drove up and pulled up next to her car and apologized for his actions. Denise promised him that she wouldn't tell police, but despite that, she drove to the first police station after she left the scene.
He's screaming and I'm just like shaking and he's telling me to stop crying that people are going to notice.
Denise reported her kidnapping to the Leon County Sheriff's Office.
I was like, are you planning on, you know, ending both of our lives today? Well, mine. I'm planning on mine. And then he would say, I want to kill myself. He must have said a million times, I want to kill myself. I was just kind of agreeing with whatever he was saying. And I was like, I know that you love me.
Brian was arrested and charged with kidnapping, domestic assault, and armed burglary, with two of the charges being felonies. Denise requested protection orders, saying that she feared for both her life and her daughter's life. After a hearing the next week, she said she could neither sleep or eat, and the court decided to hold Brian without bond. Brian started to speak to investigators about Mike and about what had happened. He told them about Denise and Mike's marriage. He said, Denise and Mike, on the other hand, they're at each other's throats, and she had 2 million reasons for this to happen. So in December 2017, Brian was sentenced to 20 years in prison for the kidnapping. He was given credit for 502 days time served and to be followed by 15 years probation. His attorney told the court that he was suicidal that day of the kidnapping due to not only the divorce but his mother's recent terminal cancer diagnosis and that his teenage son from his first marriage had also decided to move in with his mother. So Brian apparently had a lot going on. His attorney argued that those circumstances should be considered and he argued for the 10-year mandatory minimum. Prosecutors countered, though, and said Brian's actions that day show that he was planning a murder-suicide and it was only averted by Denise's quick thinking. When Brian was sentenced, there was no mention about Mike's case made. It was hoped that following the sentencing, though, there may have been some resolution, and it's believed that Brian made an agreement with prosecutors in exchange for a lesser sentence because, not surprisingly, the day after he was sentenced, Mike's body was found. Police said at the time that Mike was a victim of homicide, but they wouldn't release anything else. They said they were withholding information from the public since only the guilty parties would know the details. It was later revealed that Mike's body was found in northern Leon County in Florida. The remains were tested against Cheryl's DNA and they were confirmed to belong to Mike. Cheryl held a funeral for Mike in September 2018. So by that point, he'd been missing for 17 years, such a long time for the family to have no...
It's crazy how long
it took. They managed 17 years, they managed to get away from it. And they don't seem particularly clever or intelligent, but they managed to get away with it for 17 years.
They're just lucky that the investigators and everyone involved
did
was kind of lazy.
Job. Yeah. Cheryl said about the funeral that she held, I want everyone to come who loved Michael and want to honor him. They are welcome to come. She said, Michael was a Christian and I know he's been in heaven all these years and it's not him they are burying in the ground, but it's his earthly remains. And that's the least I can do for my child. So Denise was arrested in May 2018. She was charged with murder, conspiracy, and accessory after the fact.
It's a bittersweet feeling. You are so thankful that she has been outed for the true person she is, but it doesn't, you're still left with the same result.
Even though you saw her led away in shackles?
In an ugly dress and hair that needed a dye job. I gotta tell you, that felt pretty good to me. Because I know how important appearances are to her.
Her defense attorney, Ethan Way, said that she had nothing whatsoever to do with the killing. After her arrest, the Florida law enforcement said they had received information as to Mike's whereabouts in October 2017. So that's around the time of Brian's sentencing. A team of search dogs found Mike's remains in piles of dirt stacked on plywood sheets. 98% of his remains were found and he'd been very well preserved. Clothing, including his gloves and booties, were found at the scene. After Denise's arrest, the indictment documents were released. It says it's revealed that prosecutors believe Denise began conspiring with Brian in March 2000, 9 months before Mike disappeared. Brian is alleged to have killed Michael with a gun. The accessory charge suggested that sometime between August 2014 and the day that Brian was sentenced, Denise had allegedly helped Brian avoid prosecution or arrest for the crime. So Denise went to trial in December 2018. Audio of Brian's interview with law enforcement was played with court. He said he admitted to pulling the trigger to kill Mike, but it was all Denise's idea. He said they'd begun to consider killing Mike after they had started their affair so they could get married. Denise had an idea to stage a boating accident on the Gulf of Mexico in which both of their partners would be thrown overboard, but Brian rejected that as he said he didn't want to kill the mother of his children. They also considered planning a staged robbery at Mike's office, which would have resulted in his murder, but then Brian came up with the idea of a hunting accident as the cover-up for the murder. Brian took Mike out to the lake. He had gotten Mike to put the waders on, and then he had pushed him out of the boat, assuming that he would drown. Instead, Mike managed to swim to a tree stump. I'm guessing he was kind of clinging to this tree stump. And then Brian shot him in the face. As the death could no longer then be passed off as a boating or a hunting accident, Brian buried the body. After he did that, he went the same day to a Christmas party, and that's where he apparently found out that the search for Mike was underway. So wild. Imagine doing that, taking your best friend out, trying to drown him in the lake, shoot him in the face, burying the body, and going to a Christmas party.
No, someone's a psycho.
Yeah. So after Mike disappeared, he and Denise cooled off their relationship in order to let the insurance money raise interest and also to stop any suspicion being raised. Brian said that the kidnapping incident happened in reaction to the fear that Denise would tell police what had happened to Mike. I'm so actually shocked that they both got divorced because they both had so much to lose, I guess, in the end.
They're just, I mean, not to like throw out clinical terms, but really just seems like narcissism. Like they only care about themselves and their end goal and didn't care about hurting anyone around them.
Yeah. And I guess too, they'd gotten away with it for so long at that point. Maybe they just thought they were
feeling brazen.
Mm. So in February 2019, Denise was sentenced to life in prison. Cheryl spoke in court and said that justice had finally been served and that Denise had taken both her son and her granddaughter from her. Mike and Denise's daughter, Ansley, was given her late father's estate. The assets were signed over to her by Denise, who did so to avoid insurance fraud charges. As part of the deal, Ansley may not use any of the money on her mother's legal fees, and if she did, she would owe the state a $150,000 penalty. I'm actually surprised after that long that I guess she could have bought property and things like that with the houses, but I wonder what was left of the $1.75
million. Yeah, it's nice that at least she got to keep it.
Yeah, daughter. Absolutely. She's now lost everyone. I don't know if she's reconnected with the grandmother, but she's lost her mother, she's lost her father, her stepfather.
It's the least they can do.
Yeah. So Denise appealed her conviction in January 2020. In November that year, the murder conviction was overturned, but the conspiracy to commit murder conviction was upheld, and that includes the 30-year sentence that goes with it. In April 2021, the Florida Attorney General appealed the reversal of Denise's murder conviction to the state Supreme Court. It cited conflicting precedent and state constitutional provisions, but the court declined to hear the appeal. So at the moment, she's just been held on the conspiracy to commit murder conviction, 30 years in prison. So I guess in her lifetime, she could be out of prison. She will be very elderly by the time that comes around.
Yeah, I mean, she had a good 17 something years getting away with it, so
with a $2 million, so yeah,
ridiculous.
I feel like it's quite rare that we have a case, I guess now this because this one's older, we have a case that's totally wrapped up Obviously, the people were brought to justice after a very long wait, especially for Cheryl and probably Ansley as well. But I am glad that in the end, the people were convicted, the correct people were convicted and sentenced.
Yeah, I know it was back in the year 2000, but it's not like there wasn't any technology back then where I'm like, did the police look at contact between people? If they looked a little harder, they had to have been able to find that the two were having an affair.
Yeah.
And I feel especially like that'd be
especially it had been
going
on for years. Like that, it's not like their affair had been happening for a month. They'd been having an affair for at least 3 years prior to the disappearance.
They had like worked there's definitely together. Email in 2000. Yeah.
To try and do, like they had these multiple plans, like the Gulf of Mexico boating accident, the robbery. Obviously, they surely would have had some trail of all this stuff.
I wonder if it's because if anything would have been different if he wasn't reported to like the Wildlife Commission first as a missing hunter, because then it was almost like they just had that idea in their heads, like, oh, he was out duck hunting and he's missing in the environment. Like, we need the Wildlife Commission, because in the real... not to be like the real police, but the police, the sheriff's department, they were like the support team. Whereas if it was just called in as like a missing persons case from the jump, would things have been handled differently? I don't know.
But yeah, it's one of those cases, like I think we feel like we've spoken about this a lot lately, where the truth is really stranger than fiction. Like you'd be like, can this really actually possibly be what happened in the case? Just so wild they could get away with it for so long. The audacity of Brian to do that to his best friend. People
yeah,
are just
he's
the worst sometimes.
He's a lunatic doing all that for one, and then it's not even like he was this amazing guy to Denise. He's hiding in the back seat of her car and acting like a lunatic, and then he's the one that turned on her and turned her in.
It's crazy.
Brian, I don't know, another shitty Brian all around. I mean, I'm glad that he went and ended up being a rat, but still, it's just like, dude.
Because this happened so long ago, a lot of the links are now broken. But one thing I did read was that Brian originally came up with the idea of a hunting accident as the cause of death, because there had been an incident where he actually saved Mike from quicksand, while they were hunting together one day in Arkansas. So like that's how he came up. He's like, well, we could do this, because he nearly actually did die in another accident. So we
why didn't he go back and find that quicksand?
Crazy.
That is crazy to think. Quicksand is
even imagine being Brian's ex-wife now to know that he like obviously good riddance to
I know
him,
I wonder
to think
what
that
she
he
thinks.
Had tried to kill he had considered killing her, you know, she was the mother of the children. Just it would be such a betrayal to know that
not only did he have an affair and cheat on you and leave you, he's willing to murder this other woman's husband to be with her. I wonder what like their relationship was like before, since he is clearly a lunatic.
Yeah.
Maybe she was like, good fucking riddance.
Best decision she ever made.
Yeah. Go be crazy somewhere else. So that's really it for this case. I don't think there'll be any new information. It seems like it's closed, done with.
There are some good like media pieces on this. He was on Disappeared, obviously, before he was found. I think there's like a 48 hours or a Dateline on this case. So if you do want to go and see some more interviews with the people involved, there's a lot out there, despite it being an older case.
Yeah. So check those out if you want to learn some more. We also have a blog on the case at truecrimesocietyblog.com if you want to read about it or see our sources or anything. Check them all out there. If you want to follow us on Instagram, we're always posting updates and everything there of current cases and what's going on at True Crime Society on Instagram. And our personal accounts, mine is Steph_Sum_, Olivia's TCS Olivia. If you want to see what we're up to, and check us out on Patreon. We have Patreon. We do all the episodes ad-free. We do weekly bonus episodes, so you get an extra episode once a week as well. And we have like a nice little community on there, chats and all that. And just make sure you're subscribed to the podcast on whatever platform you listen on. Leave us some nice comments, sharing to your Instagram stories, all that's always a big help to us to help grow. So maybe this year we can quit our jobs. Maybe. Probably not, but we can hope.
Yeah, it's still early in the year. We still have hope. We're not jaded yet.
Yet. But that's it. Thank you guys for listening. Hope we have a great year this year, all of us collectively. Let's make it the best one yet. So stay safe out there. Thanks again for listening. Peace out.
See ya.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.